Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Georgia on Her Mind by Rachel Houck, narrated by Amanda Ronconi. Chapter 1. 2. All Casper & Co. Reorganization. I skimmed the email from Casper & Company's Director of Operations and my boss, Veronica Karpinski. In order to streamline our workflow, blah, blah, yada, yada, I scroll down farther. Reordering of departments. She never mentioned that to me. As manager of customer service, I'm usually privy to such upheavals. Starting Monday, Mike Perkins will assume manager of customer service responsibilities. What? Mike Perkins? I reread. Starting Monday. Each word zaps me like an electric shock. In a panic, I snatch up the phone and auto-dial Lucy O'Brien. My hands shake. My stomach curdles. My friend's phone rings 100 times, or so it seems to me. Come on, Lucy, pick up. I can't hold my tears back any longer. But I must. Crying women, crying managers of customer service, are not highly regarded.
Unprofessional displays of emotion.
Is the actual phrase our CEO, Kyle Casper, used in a staff meeting after Marcia Carter lost it when she didn't get promoted to senior administrator again. These are the worst kind of tears. Tears of frustration. Tears of anger. Tears that take forever to stop once they start. I can't believe this place, I mutter, gazing again at the email, enduring another ring on Lucy's end without an answer. What is it, 10:30? The day has barely begun. And already it's one of the crummiest of my life. My call to Lucy bounces to voicemail. You've reached the desk of Lucy O'Brien. I am unable. I bypass the message by pressing 1. Lucy? My voice quivers, so I halt for a steadying breath. It's Macy? Call me, please. I slap the receiver onto the cradle and pace the length of my corner window office. What is going on? What is Ronnie up to now? Outside my office window, dark blue storm clouds swell and move across the Florida sky, and I catch my reflection in the glass. Leaning in for a closer look, I give myself the once-over. Ann Taylor suit, Gucci boots, face dusted to perfection with Bare Essentials, my shiny brunette hair grazing my shoulders. I am the picture of a 21st-century businesswoman. I'm exactly where I thought I'd be at this stage in my 33-year-old life. Until that obnoxious morning email. I stride back to my desk, kick the chair out and sit down, hard, trying to balance the juxtaposition of emotions. Confusion mingled with anger, tears of weakness mingled with stubborn resolve. I thought I'd outgrown these moments. It's going to be a long day.
Macy?
My department's admin, Jillian, lurks outside my door. Snapping out of my sulk, I pretend to be busy by reaching for my mouse. What can I do for you, Jill? I jiggle the mouse to wake up the sleeping laptop screen.
You okay?
I force a smile. Of course, why wouldn't I be? Am I yelling? 'Cause it sounds to me as if I'm yelling. I clear my throat and lower my voice. Anything else? I jiggle the mouse again. The screen wakes up. The horrifying email screams at me. Loser. Jillian lowers herself into the cushioned chair across from my desk.
I saw you come in this morning. New boots?
Yes.
They're gorgeous.
Gucci. Bought them on my trip to Manhattan.
How much?
Jillian doesn't mess around. Your week's wages. I don't mess around either. Did you really come in here to talk about my boots?
Yeah, sure.
Her cheeks turn a deep shade of pink. You know you blush when you lie?
Attila sent out the new organization chart,
she blurts out, tossing a copy of the new org chart on my desk. Attila is our code name for Veronica Karpinski, short for Attila the Hun. I inadvertently labeled her with the moniker several years ago when she was an up-and-comer, bustling around the office commanding and conquering. To my chagrin, the name stuck. To my good fortune, no one remembers where or when it originated. So I see. I duck behind my laptop.
Jillian stretches toward me, whispering,
"You're reporting to Mike Perkins now?"
Truly, I want to scream.
I can read email.
The tears surface again, and I'm sure if I blink even once, they'll spill over. I click on an old email from Lucy to get the horrid "I've been demoted" email off the screen. "Anything else I can do for you, Jillian?" I ask, ready for this exchange to be over. The pressure beneath is about to cause an explosion, and I can't be responsible for Jillian's safety.
What is Attila thinking? I mean, everyone loves you. Mike is so...
She knows what she's doing. As angry as I am at Ronnie right now, I cannot be drawn into idle talk with Jillian Holmes, resident gossip at large. Anything I say can and will be circulated around the office.
Well, if there's anything...
I stand, cutting her off. I'm good. Thanks. My phone rings as Jillian exits. Caller ID tells me it's Lucy. Thank goodness. I stretch around my desk with one booted leg and tip the door shut. The dam holding back the tears breaks.
"Macy, what's wrong?"
Lucy asks about 10 times before I can suck it up enough to answer her.
"I'm so angry, so, so angry,"
I manage between sobs. I drop my head and braid back my hair with my fingers. Tears drip onto the faux oak desktop. I wipe them away with the edge of the org chart Jillian left behind.
"What happened?"
"Attila the Hun reorganized the entire operations department."
"When?"
"Over the weekend, I guess."
"And?"
"I am no longer manager of customer service."
"What? Can she do that?"
"She just did. Flip-flop a few names on a chart and..." My head pounds from the sudden surge of emotions. Casper is a medium-sized but wildly successful software company. Kyle Casper's latest brainchild, W-Book, is destined to take the World Wide Web by storm. Everyone from Little Johnny to Great Granny can create and maintain a website. It's as easy as W-Book. But I digress.
"You know how these things go, Luce. They do what they want.
Changing departments and department heads at the drop of a hat is nothing new.
I just never imagined it would happen to me."
Lucy consoles me.
"Macy, you are so good at what you do. You earned that job."
"You don't think I know that? But as of this morning's email, I report to Mike Perkins, the new manager of customer service. He reports to Ronnie."
"She could have at least changed his title," Lucy notes in a soft tone. "One would think." I'm back to fuming. There is no reason, absolutely no reason for her to replace me. My performance evaluations do not indicate unsatisfactory work or poor leadership. I give 110% to Casper and Company. I arrive early, stay late. Last Thanksgiving, I volunteered to work over the holiday weekend to help secure a $500,000 deal. And in December, I donated the last 2 days of my Colorado vacation to accompany the VP of sales on a client visit.
"Macy, there has to be a reason," Lucy concludes.
"Attila the Hun's lunatic incompetence?"
"Talk to Kyle," she suggests.
"He's a coward. He'll tell me to talk to Ronnie and then back whatever she says."
"Then talk to Ronnie."
Lucy's full of advice I don't like.
"No, she did this. Let her come to me."
"Fine," Lucy sighs. "Then live with it. No complaints." I laugh. "Do you know me at all?"
"Since the 10th grade."
"I love you like a sister, but I won't spend the next year listening to you whine about what Veronica Karpinski did to you." Lucy knows me all right. But nothing about her honesty changes the fact that I will complain. If this were mine to own, I'd darken Ronnie's office door and deal. But this is her game. I am, was, a department manager.
Manager.
Trainers, tech support, sales support, and documentation reported to me. I watched out over them. My people. Mike Perkins. Who's she kidding? The staff can't stand him. He's egotistical, all the while being incredibly goofy. Every week he comes into the staff meeting, clears his throat about 100 times, and asks,
"Do any of you need the latest episode of Xena Warrior Princess? I've got it on TiVo."
every week. He frightens me. I hear a light knock and look up to see Ronnie peering in, pushing my office door open. Luce, call you back. So, the coward came calling. With my back to her, I give one last swipe of my eyes with a soggy org chart, then whip around with a faint smile and invite my former boss to have a seat.
What do you think?
She picks up the org chart with her manicured hand as she pulls up a chair. She makes a face.
It's wet.
Water. I was using it as a coaster.
Oh.
She drops the paper back to the desk.
Well?
She crosses her legs and swings her foot up and down. I don't understand it. My headache intensifies. I lean against the side of my desk for support. I suppose I could sit, but somehow standing gives me a sense of control, real or imagined.
Change, Macy. We're taking the customer service department to the next level.
The dark clouds outside my window produce a rumble of thunder. I look out just as a bolt of lightning flickers to the ground like a snake's tongue. Suddenly rain rat-a-tats against the window. What next level? I ask, facing Ronnie. What are you talking about?
Mike Perkins developed a plan to weave training and tech support with product development. He's added a few new tiers to our structure. Kyle likes it. I like it.
A few new tiers? Corporate mumbo-jumbo. I don't know what to say.
Say you're on board.
Ronnie smiles. Her foot is still swinging back and forth. With bravado, I ask, why didn't you tell me you wanted to make a change? I was a manager, Ronnie.
Just business, Macy. Don't get offended.
She shrugs as if it's no big deal. Just business? That's all the respect I get from her? I earned this job, Ronnie. I know this industry, our products and customers. I deserve better. I sell myself to her all over again, hoping I sound more confident than desperate.
If you don't want to come aboard.
Her words trail off, but she looks me square in the eye. I absorb her subtle threat. The blood drains from my brain straight down to my feet, and I fear I might grovel involuntarily. I have to be humble here. My newly purchased BMW Z4 convertible emptied my savings account, and my credit card is loaded with Christmas cheer. I walk around to my desk chair. I'm not in control here at all. Might as well sit. If Mike is manager, what do I do?
What you love,
Ronnie says, expectant and puffed up, looking as if she just announced a resolution to world hunger.
Hands-on work with customers, training and traveling. Our team needs your experience.
I rocket to my feet, crashing my desk chair into the credenza. Go on the road.
Exactly.
No, Ronnie, no. I've been there, done that. I own all the t-shirts. I won't have my life controlled by the schedule. I have a life. A boyfriend. Yes. Chris, my boyfriend. A thought flutters through my mind. Was I supposed to call him about lunch?
Think of the frequent flyer miles.
She stands, smoothing her light wool skirt.
That's the job we're offering you, Macy.
Frequent flyer miles. There aren't enough miles in the entire airline industry to entice me back into being a road warrior. No way. I need air. I jerk my Hermes Birkin bag from the bottom desk drawer and snatch my London Fog trench coat, both part of the Christmas cheer on my credit card, from the brass hook on the wall.
Where are you going?
Ronnie follows me down the hall. Through a tightly clenched jaw, I let her know. Anywhere but here. Chapter 2. I dial Chris's cell and office phone, but he doesn't answer. Chances are he'll show up at our place, Pop's Diner, eventually. I park close to the door and dash inside, dodging raindrops. Snippets of my conversation with Attila the Hun replay in my head.
Mike Perkins, go on the road as a trainer.
Been there, done that.
If you don't want to come aboard.
I slide into a booth by the door. Elizabeth sees me and comes over, snapping her gum.
What'll it be?
Double order of fries. Make sure they're hot. I'm blowing a day's worth of Weight Watchers points, and I want it to be hot and salty.
Starting out a little early, aren't you?
She asks,
jotting down my order. And a large Diet Coke. I wrap the edge of my napkin around my finger. I've lost my job. Whoa. Wait. If I'm no longer a manager, what happens to my salary? What about raises and bonuses? I planned on this quarter's bonus to replenish my savings account and pay for Christmas. I drop my forehead to the tabletop and try not to cry. If Mike is me, and I'm, well, still me, but a plain Jane techie, do I have a plain Jane salary? Does he have my salary? I've heard of that happening before. A person is reorganized to a different job where the pay is conveniently less. I feel a swoon coming on. Do women still swoon? I've just been shoved off the career path of the upwardly mobile into the proverbial ditch of the down and out. I lift my head when Elizabeth sets down my Coke. Having a nice day? She asks. No. I tear the paper off my straw. My cell phone chirps, and I answer, hoping it's Chris. But it's Lucy, which is just as good. I'm at Pop's, I say when I answer.
Macy. Oh, no. It's not worth it.
Too late. I've ordered double fries. She sighs.
I'm on my way.
Lucy O'Brien hasn't eaten junk food since a 1994 60 Minutes expose. If I'd said I was standing on the ledge of the Melbourne Causeway about to plunge 90 feet into the Indian River, she couldn't have responded with any more urgency. So, seeing Lucy, a slender, red-headed Florida Daily News investigative reporter, dash into Pops like a superheroine, almost makes me laugh. Almost.
I got here as quickly as I could.
She slides into the seat across from me, stowing her umbrella and pulling a wet wipe from her purse. She towels off the table. But it's too late. My cheeks are fat with fries. I wash them down with a slurp of soda.
That stuff is going to kill you, Macy.
Lucy wrinkles her nose and sticks out her tongue.
How you and Chris eat this garbage is beyond me.
This won't kill me. Veronica Karpinski will kill me. I shake a long, salty fry under her nose. She shoves my hand away with a yuck expression on her face. I shove the fry in my mouth. You do not know what you're missing, my friend.
Veronica Karpinski can only kill you if you let her.
Lucy makes air quotes around the word kill, as if either of us thinks this conversation is literal. She's doing a pretty good job of killing my Casper career. Lucy taps my hand.
You're going to be okay, Macy. This whole thing will straighten itself out, and you know what?
I bet you'll be Ronnie's boss this time next year. Are you crazy? She would never, ever let that happen. She eats, breathes, and sleeps that place. She broke off her third engagement because the guy asked her to take 1 weekend a month off work. I held up my drink glass for a refill.
What does Chris say about all of this?
Lucy asks, ordering a cup of herbal tea when Elizabeth brings me a new drink. Good question. I tried to call him, but he's not answering his phones. Maybe I'll run by his office. Lucy's hazel eyes pop wide, and her gaze is fixed on something behind me.
Oh, no. Don't look.
Of course I look. There's Chris, finally, dashing into the restaurant. Now the sun is shining. I lift my hand to woo-hoo him over to our table, but he's with a petite, smiley, bleached blonde, wearing lowriders and platform shoes. The two of them are wet and laughing. Who is she? I wonder out loud.
Not his sister,
Lucy mutters out of the corner of her pinched lips, and points out how snugly his hand is resting on her hip. Maybe a friend? I pretend the slicing pain in my chest is indigestion. His hand is not that snug on her hip. Not really.
Oh, for crying out loud, Macy, get a clue.
I told you not to eat this junk. It's decaying your brain. Lucy shoves me out of my seat.
Go see what he's up to.
Chris? I bellow, without considering where I might take this scene.
Macy.
He jumps away from the blonde as if he's been bitten by a dog. That would be me, I guess.
What are you doing here?
He asks. Early lunch? I cross my arms, glaring at him, studying her. With a confused look on his face, he asks,
Did we have plans for today?
Obviously, neither of us is paying much attention to this relationship. I tried to call you, I say, arms still crossed, eyes still fixed on this cozy couple.
I've been out all morning.
I guess so. I smile at the blonde.
Chris fumbles forward.
This is Kate Winters. Kate, this is,
Macy Moore? The buffoon forgot my name. If we weren't in public, I'd kick him in the knee. Then the other knee.
It's nice to meet you.
Kate offers her hand. She seems innocent enough. Intuition tells me if I want the truth about this situation, she's my best bet. With a faux chuckle, I commence my investigation.
You two work together?
Kate laughs.
Oh, no. I just moved into my new apartment and Chris is helping me furniture shop.
She smiles all too sweetly. He loves double cheeseburgers, so we came here for lunch. Of course, he loves double cheeseburgers. Odd that she would know that.
So you two know each other from where?
Giddy Kate jumps right in with an explanation.
I'm a graduate student at Florida Tech. Chris was my economics adjunct professor last term.
How about that? I give Chris a look. Kate continues, beaming.
I didn't have classes today, so Chris took the day off to be with me.
Ah, it's becoming clear. Yes, crystal clear. Chris is cheating on me. Or cheating on Kate. I don't know which. I decide to out him.
Kate?
For the last 6 months, I've been Chris's girlfriend. At least I was until about 5 minutes ago.
Chris?
Kate stares up at him. Oh, brother, I think she's going to cry. Chris goes into weasel mode.
Kate, Macy, I...
All at once, Lucy is beside me, jerking me toward the door.
Come on, Macy. He's not worth the effort.
She hands me my soda, refilled, drops my coat onto my shoulders and slips my purse onto my arm.
6 months, Chris. Wasted.
What a rotten, weaseling, two-timing scoundrel. I stop at the door and offer Kate a word of advice.
Run.
Lucy pushes me into a nippy February drizzle.
What's going on?
I gaze heavenward, arms raised. The dissipating rain sprinkles me.
Lord! Hello? It's me, Macy Moore, your friend. What are you doing to me?
Lucy shushes me. People are staring.
Let them stare.
I flail my arms about, the contents of my cup sloshing over.
Macy, really?
Lucy grabs at me, indignant.
What was I thinking, Lucy? Chris right. Ha! More like Chris wrong.
I shout toward the restaurant, hoping he'll hear me.
Did you see her? Him with her?
Yes, I saw. How did I not see this coming? Grad student, indeed. That's what I get for dating a man who likes to play with other people's money. Nothing is sacred to him. Like the mature woman I am, I kick a newspaper stand and nick my fancy boots.
Macy, please, pull yourself together.
Gather myself? Lucy, my career has tanked. My boyfriend is, I don't know, dating another woman, and this drink is watery.
I head for my car, flinging the drink into the nearest trash can, and wipe my chilled hand on the sleeve of my coat.
Where are you going?
Lucy trails me.
Home. I need to think. Sort this out.
I regard my dear friend for a second, then stride over to where she's standing and give her a hug.
Thanks for being there for me.
I'm coming over tonight.
Bring Chinese.
Chapter 3. Arriving home, I decide to do what any woman of my education and stature would do. Pout.
Pity party for one, please.
I change into my party outfit, a ratty pair of red sweats. Earlier, I couldn't get Ronnie's attitude out of my head. Now I can't stop picturing Chris with that incredibly cute woman. In the mirror over my couch, I check my appearance. My hair is matted together from the rain, my eyes are puffy and red, and black mascara residue has pooled under my eyes and left streaks on my face. I look like a member of Cirque du Soleil. Comparing myself to a perky Florida Tech grad student right now is stupid, but stupid hasn't stopped me before. It occurs to me as I fall onto the couch that in this dark hour I should pray. But dialoguing with God feels, at the very least, hypocritical. We haven't been on intimate speaking terms for a few months, and going to him now because my life is in ruins doesn't seem right. Okay, maybe that's when one should run to God. But, quite frankly, when I met Chris, I sort of took over the rudder of my life. Thanks, Lord, I have my career and a good man. I'll take it from here. I flop over onto my stomach, bury my face in a thick, fringed pillow, and punch the sofa cushion until my arm tires 3 whacks later. Mental note, renew gym membership. I backtrack over my life with Chris to determine where it went wrong. I met him at a community work party, cleaning up parts of downtown Melbourne right before my 33rd birthday and right after my biological clock sent its first alarm. Hello, you're a 30-something, Macy. That shook me. I desperately wanted a career and life outside my small hometown of Beauty, Georgia, but I never ever wanted to be one of those workaholic women who wakes up at 45 and says, "Oops, I forgot to have a family." So, with the baby bells still chiming, I ran into Chris a few days later at Pop's, and he asked me to dinner. He took me to the chart house. Very nice. And we simply clicked, as if we'd known each other forever. Suddenly, getting married became a priority. I hadn't met a man like Chris in a long time. Handsome, goal-oriented, sweet, well-spoken, and moneyed. My personal I-don't-want-to-be-an-old-maid fear factor precluded asking God for his opinion. So, this is where that plan has brought me. Broken Heartville. Drat. The phone rings, calling me out of the pity pool. I fumble to find the portable lost somewhere under the coffee table. I bump my head, reaching for it. Hello? I sit up, rubbing my forehead. Winter's afternoon light falls across my living room floor. I check the digital on the mantle. 2 o'clock. Macy? It's my neighbor across the street. Mrs. Woodward, how are you? The words come out slowly and high-pitched, and it sounds as if one of us is an imbecile, and it's not her. I see you came home in the middle of the day. Are you ill? In a manner of speaking. Oh, dear. Well, I have soup on. I wince. That's the umpteenth time she's called me for a meal this year, and it's only February. I have yet to accept because I've been busy. Really, I have. Thank you, Mrs. Woodward, but I just had lunch, and to be honest, I'm not very good company right now. I understand. How about for dinner? I wince again. I have a friend coming over. Boy or girl? Oh, brother. Girl. Lucy. You remember Lucy? Of course. I can set a place for her, too. Her voice goes up on 2 as if she's tempting me with $1 million. She's bringing Chinese. Well, then another night. Ta-ta. Yeah, ta-ta. Lucy bungles through the door around 7:30 with bags of Chinese comfort. I'm starved. Here. She hands me a few pieces of mail. Dan Montgomery said they were in his box. Ah. Handsome Dan, the condo community's resident hunky lawyer. Think George Clooney meets Arnold Schwarzenegger. You look horrible, Lucy says, walking toward the kitchen. Thanks. I was going for hideous, but horrible is good. I glance in the couch mirror again. No, I think I achieved hideous. Go wash up, I'll get the plates. You do realize Dan was about to knock on your door. Oh, really? That would have been the icing on the cake of my day. Opening the door to handsome Dan while looking like a dead skunk. I bet his girlfriend, perfect woman, was with him. In the downstairs bathroom, I scrub my face with the bar of soap on the sink. I'm too tired, too I don't care, to run upstairs for my overpriced facial cleanser. Soap will do. Lucy is yelling something at me. What? I holler back, turning off the water. Remember your dinner with him? Him who? Chris? Of course I remember. No, Dan, when you first moved into the complex. Lucy passes by with a plate of food. I pat my face dry. Oh, Dan, yeah. She laughs. You asked him where he went to church, and he said, check, please. I laugh with her. Some things aren't meant to be. A few months after our little dinner disaster, Dan started dating Perfect Woman, and they've been thick as thieves ever since. I light the gas logs in the fireplace, fill my plate, and plant myself in the lounger. It's good to have Lucy here.
but she gets personal right before my first bite of Mugu Gaipan.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?